Welcome to the community. This episode is just one in a line of season 5 episodes that just seem to keep getting better and better. And I get to talk to a Silicon Valley legend by the name of Scott K. Wilder, who's worked in marketing and community for some really recognizable brand names like Marketo, HubSpot, and sentimentally, the first program I ever got on the internet with was called eWorld, and he worked on that. So really, really cool conversation about community-led growth, which is now the buzzword in Silicon Valley circles that I'm trying to pioneer here in regular people circles. But we talk about everything from how you stand it up, how you hire for it, what it means, how to keep people engaged, and we get into some conversations about stuff that I just haven't had a chance to talk to anybody because of his dearth of experience. And it's really validating, really inspiring what's happening out there. So I'm going to leave you to it, but just remind you that after the show, I tell you what the next conference I'm going to, which we just passed 2 amazing conferences, and my number one takeaway from this episode. So stick around, enjoy rattling around in the brain of Scott K. Wilder.
If you know how it is, then you know how it might be. But think what it would look like if you grow your own community. It ain't easy. That's why you're listening to hear experiences from others just like you and me. Welcome to the B2B Community Builder Podcast, a show that was started because if you can unlock the power of having a community around your business, then you will create a source of referrals, validation, marketing content, and product feedback that will be unbeatable. But who has time to think about building a community when you need to be making sure that your team has what it needs to succeed in serving clients and bringing in revenue? That is why we'll be talking to business leaders like you and I that have cracked the code on why the community play is so valuable, how to implement tactics that got them there while still serving short-term goals, and what they can teach you that they have mastered. This show is for you if you are a CEO, CMO, or simply a rainmaker that has realized that without a community, you are just a commodity, but haven't figured out how to add it to your infinite list of priorities. This show is for you if you are a community professional or trying to be a community professional that is trying to convince leadership about the need to invest in a community strategy. This show is not for you if you think transactions are more valuable than relationships. I am your host and chief executive connector, Pablo Gonzalez, co-founder of BeTheStage.live, a marketing company that specializes in relationship-driven growth. I invented the relationship flywheel, and hopefully, I'm your new best friend. So smash that subscribe button, leave a rating when you do, and get ready to plug into the power of community creation for business development. Let's go.
We're officially live on Facebook, season 5, the B2B Community Builder Show. Episode I lost track for right now, but really, really big show today because I've talked to a lot of people. I talk to everybody about community. Rarely do I get to talk to somebody who is a OG in the world of tech. He was part of Apple when they launched the first internet platform that I ever used, eWorld, which I had never heard a reference of since middle school until I started researching Scott. But then since then, Scott's come up through brands such as household brands, Intuit, Adobe, Audacity, HubSpot. Now he's at CrowdVocate, and he is right in the intersection of marketer and community builder. That is exactly what I find fascinating. Has a new spot. He's gone from being a big company, big tech guy to a entrepreneur guy in CrowdVocate. He is reformed in his way, but I think we're going to have a really, really interesting conversation about community, tech, marketing, all the cool stuff behind the scenes. Scott Wilder, welcome to the B2B Community Builder Show. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. Always enjoy the conversation. So let's talk.
I enjoy our conversations too. I enjoy our conversations. As you know, this is a live internet talk show. The way that I do this methodology, we got a community that's a part of it. I want the community be part of the conversation. Already seeing them check in. In the chat, we got Lori saying hello. Hey, Lori, good to have you. We got Luisa. Hello. Luisa's from Colombia.
She says, nice to be here. And we got Don Bates, a Oxford PhD candidate, human rights activist, author, living in Costa Rica. We got a great community here. Thank you so much for coming. Scott, I kind of want to kick it over to you. I re-listened to our onboarding call, which feels like two centuries ago, but I liked where we started off. And we started off along the lines of, you've got this breadth of experience, and I'm kind of new to this whole game, but we really agreed on this idea that companies don't see community as a Monday morning problem. And in my quest to fix that, in my quest to add value to it, I would love to get your perspective on kind of why that is. And as you've seen this evolve, how you speak of it to really provide the value to people.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. First, I see some few people from Colombia, or people miss Colombia. And I have some relatives from Colombia who used to tease me because I would use a U, like Columbia University. And so I got my hand slapped. You know, it's funny. You know, when I interviewed at HubSpot, I made the BHAG statement that I thought community should be the homepage for everything HubSpot. And I've always really believed that, you know, it's a place for all different types of people in your ecosystem. In fact, you know, we talk about community-led growth, customer-led growth. You know, it's really about people-led growth. And so they're gathering in one place. And I thought that, you know, maybe I was a little bit of the New Yorker was coming out in me saying, okay, like let's have community be the homepage for the site. Community has really evolved over time. You know, we talked about last time, this is, you know, community's moment, but it's gone through an evolution. And I think still companies are reticent about recognizing the community team or putting the resources in it. Now, why is that? You know, there's the holy grail of trying to tie community to ROI or tying it to lifetime value. There's also, you know, you still have some residue of people that in management that are afraid of what people are going to say on community, right? Like they're going to say something bad about my company. But, you know, I have one or two gray hairs here. And in all my lifetime of being on communities, I've only probably counted one hand of somebody has really said something bad about the community. Because yes, most of the communities I've worked on have like targeted marketers and small businesses. And what they have in common is they want to help each other, right? There's no, you know, ego. There's very little ego in terms of these audiences. They like, we're in it together. You know, somebody, I was talking to Allison this morning, who works at PeerSpot. She's great. And she's like, this industry marketing is changing so fast. We're all trying to learn together, you know? And so I think that's another kind of aspect of it. I think in terms of getting ahead in terms of careers, you know, something I still believe is that it's also, so we talked about the company and the platforms. I also think for the practitioner, it's a little bit hard because there's very few like CMOs who are community managers, right? So it's not in their DNA. Mm. So you're going to have a CMO who's going to probably lean a lot to what they know well, whether they want to admit it or not. Like they're, you know, they've developed that muscle for branding. So they're going to go heavy into branding. Now we are seeing some changes here. We are seeing some, you know, people who are becoming community leaders, VPs of community at smaller companies, but still not a lot at larger companies, right? Now, where's it going to go? I think what's going to accelerate this is that people are starting to think about community isn't SAD. I use the acronym SAD. If you know me, I like acronyms and I like to talk in threes. So SAD is community is not siloed, it's not an add-on, and it's not just discussion threads. So we're moving to this new evolution here where community is being thought of how it's integrated into advocacy or how it's being integrated into education, right? We're seeing, you know, since I've left HubSpot, a lot of people have reached out to me about how can I think about integrating community and education and then partners, right? So, you know, Alan Adler is doing a great job really talking about the ecosystem-led growth. And really what he's talking about is like, you know, partners need to be part of your ecosystem. They need to be part of your community. So that's kind of where I think it's going. These are some of the trends. Now at CrowdVocate, so we really focus on creating this customer marketing platform that can help drive advocacy, references, lifecycle marketing, everything. So we put a stake in the ground and said, we're going to start with the customer first. And so really leaning into the customer. But when you think about community-led growth and customer-led growth, there's a bit of a Venn diagram going on.
I would imagine, man. And you're kind of, it's funny, as I think of it, you basically said a couple of
words that describe our past two guests, right? Ecosystem Marketing was Pamela Slim, who wrote The Widest Net. I don't know if you ever read that book. I highly recommend it. And then we just had Kelly Schermerhorn, who was talking about customer marketing and agile marketing, right? So I see a big overlap in everything that you're talking about. And to me, I love the idea of starting with the customer, right? Like I can't imagine how it hasn't been that way. And how did it get to the point where it's unnatural for us to start with the customer? Like what is happening in companies that, I don't know, man. I don't even know how to phrase that, but like, doesn't it strike you as odd? Like, I feel like you've been in a lot of boardrooms and you've been in a lot of like leadership situations. What is the disconnect that pulls people away from starting with the customer?
Well, one thing is, I think that where's the center of gravity? When I worked at Marketo, it was marketing, operations, demand, gen. A lot of companies, the center of gravity is engineering and product, right? So they'll focus there first. And let's face it, you know, like I build something, I think it's pretty cool, like that product, you know? And so sometimes it's hard to get out of like, you know, to have that empathy and take a different perspective. I was talking to a company the other day, which we would all know, but I don't know if I can go public about it, but they are doing a dramatic shift from years and years of product-led growth to customer-led growth. And it doesn't happen overnight. It's like, it's a big shift, you know, customer. I'm working on a post right now, which is like, we have customer marketing, we have customer service, and we have customer success, right? Yet how often are they in the same room, right? You know, so the first obstacle is, where's the center of gravity, like product or engineering? The second thing is, we've given three different groups to think about customers. So even if we are thinking about customers, we're all trying to talk to the same person at the same time, you know? And so you really need a forcing function to change that mindset. So what is a forcing function? Many years ago, I'm showing my age, in the 1900s, I worked at American Express, and American Express treated its card members as so you would have, let's just say Dawn. So Dawn would have a green card, a gold card, and a corporate card, and she'd be treated as three customers. So when American Express woke up one day and said, oh my God, like, we have more of a card focus. We're more focused on cards. We don't think about Dawn. So they created this program called Membership Miles, which now has become rewards, a rewards program. And the reason they created that program was to link all the credit cards to one account. Like, think about that. Like, that's here, nuts. Out of all the companies I've worked at, they've been the most sophisticated in terms of retention marketing, loyalty marketing, but they had to explicitly come up with this program to link all of Dawn's, to treat Dawn as one person versus three people. And so center of gravity, habit, right? So all these people like habit of like, you know, I'm going to focus on my green card. Something I've wrestled with in the company a lot is shared metrics. I don't know why, but companies don't assign shared metrics to two teams, three teams, or four teams, right? So in a previous company, you know, I'd go in front of the CMO and I'd say, here's my engagement for community. And the next person would come in the room and say, here's my engagement for education. And the next person would come in, here's my education for advocacy. We're all talking to the same people, right? It's like this Venn diagram where 60, 70% is overlapped. So, you know, we have to like break that habit, and companies need to start saying, okay, we're going to have these cross-functional teams with shared metrics. And we can start with a customer marketer, maybe. I'm showing my bias here, but a customer marketing who is used to talking to that customer on an everyday basis.
All right. I'm gonna recap a little bit of a couple of the things you
said.
Sorry
if that's a lot.
No. I'm super into it, right? Like there's a couple of things that speak to me, right? Like when you're speaking about the different teams and stuff, that hasn't been my world for a little while now, because I'm out here trying to, you know, build my own company and it's bootstrapped and whatnot. Yep. But what really speaks to me is the center of gravity conversation, right? Like I'm guilty of it too. I'm trying to pioneer this whole community creation for business development thing, which I guess is another way of saying community-led growth. And I've been guilty for a long time of being so in love with this like methodology that I created, this relationship flywheel that I created, that is this like perfect thing that can fit for everybody. And I found myself my first year and a half speaking above the room about how brilliant this thing is, as opposed to how much better your life is going to be when I take away this pain with this solution. And I think it's really, really natural, right? Like I go back to, I've always been obsessed with a relationship. By the way, I've said I like four times, talk about center of gravity, right? Like the idea
I'm writing it down. I'm keeping track.
Please. The idea, it's like the and ah counter at Toastmasters. The idea that it's about you and not about me is one of these things that the earlier you learn it in your life as a communicator, the better it is for you. And I feel like the earlier you learn it as a business person or as a business developer, the better it is for you, right? And I could absolutely see why in the tech world, the product engineer who's just like by himself in a computer coming up with this brilliant code thing that does this thing that they're in love with is really detached by that. And those tend to be the founders, right?
Yep. I mean, you know, we're Silicon Valley, where I tell people I've worked up and down Highway 101, although now it's remote and virtual, has a lot of bright people. And, you know, I learned early on in my career when I would go into Intuit was smaller and I'd go to Scott Cook's office and I'd have all my fancy charts because I was data driven, right? We're all data driven. And he would take it and throw it away and say, tell me what they're saying. Tell me in their words what your customers are saying. And I stumbled the first few times, right? And even though we're customer focused, or we want to be, how many customer marketers talk to customers on a consistent basis? How many support does, because, you know, and so does success. But I think it has to be in the DNA of everybody in the company. And, you know, my team has heard me use the word co-pilot a lot. And I'm really big, even ridiculously focused on whatever we developed, whether it's a course, whether it's a product, we're co-pilots with our customers and we need to partner with them. You know, somebody who is really talented, well-intentioned, you know, said it's slowing us down. And I'm like, I will take a step back to walk in a customer's shoes.
I love that, man. That's a quote card. I will take a step back to walk in a customer's shoes. The idea of co-piloting, we talk about a lot with co-creation, right? Like this idea of like when you're co-creating the content that you're going to use to market yourself, you're building these other stakeholders and whatnot, man. So I'm right along lines with that. So we're going to, you know, I don't know if you know this, we make post-production pieces out of all this. We're going to make some quote cards for you. I want to make a quote card out of every acronym that you spit out. So I want to go back to community isn't sad. It's not in silos. It's not just advocacy. It's not in, okay, can you say that one again so that?
No. Advocacy is a key part of it. So it's not sad. So siloed, add-on, discussion threads.
Yeah.
So anybody who's worked in the community space knows exactly what I'm talking about. Like trying to get real estate on that homepage of the company work homepage is difficult. Trying to get in, you know, other teams to help out. And then discussion threads, you know, is kind of where a lot of places start.
Got it. Communities and SAD. It's not silos. It's not add-ons. It's not discussion boards. Love that. Let's go to another acronym that you kind of threw out at me before this call. And you're talking about CARE, right? When it comes to customer marketing and advocacy, talk me through the CARE one as it comes to a CRA advocate.
Yeah. Unfortunately, this is four characters. So my kids tell me I need to count better. But so, you know, my role at CRA advocate is customer engagement and community. The team is really interesting because we're focused on building out the customer-led growth industry. But internally, and I think we need to do a better job using it externally, we call ourselves the CARE team. Community, advocacy, resources, and education.
CARE, community, advocacy, resources, and education. Talk to me how they all fit in.
Yeah. So, well, they all fit in because they should all be integrated, right? And I think more and more people in the customer marketing space and other spaces are waking up to this. Is that, you know, your customer, you don't want to bombard them with multiple platforms and multiple experiences and multiple links. You want a kind of a unified place for the customer to go. When we were talking earlier on, I said, you know, when I interviewed at HubSpot, one of the first things I said is community should be the homepage for the whole company. And what I meant by that is there should be one place where people can go for user-created content, education content, advocacy programs, et cetera. When I worked at Marketo, we did a pretty good job of that because the buy-in at management was the .com was going to be for acquisition and the platform I was managing was going to be for all the customers and all the partners. So when you did a search, you would actually, some people call it federated search, but I'll call it federated search on steroids. So you searched on XYZ, you would see user-created content from the community, you'd see learning content from the academy, you'd see partner content from partners, and also templates from, you know, from internal, external, et cetera. So the CARE team is really focused on building an industry, creating a seamless integrated experience for customers to interact with your brand or to just learn about the industry itself.
Love that. Love that. So big repository of everything that you need to, what I'm hearing is just a repository of everything you need to succeed that influences your customer's journey in the transformation that you're trying to help them make. Is there anything, anything outside of that?
Yeah. I mean, techies would say it's a platform. And look at all these platform books I have here. But I would say it's just a place for your customers to go. And it's a single place. When a customer goes to your website, it basically looks like an org chart, right? And everything is siloed. Like you have your, you know, your product here, your service support here. I'm saying for your customer first, it's all integrated. Let the customer say, I have a problem, a question, or a job I'm trying to solve. I've come, or a job I'm trying to do. I've gone to this place. Now help me learn. Help me learn about my craft. Help me accelerate my career.
Nice. And that, you know, like when I hear you talk about that, I think of, you know, obviously everything that we're trying to accomplish, but I don't know if you've heard of Chris Walker and Refine Labs and what they're doing, right? Like how they've built this like company in under 3 years that's gone to 100+ employees and is probably at like 60 million ARR as a service company. Wow. through this like weekly show that's just like this, right? As it's like an internet talk show, right? Where he's showing up and it's giving people career advice, right? It's helping people become better marketers and understanding that, yes, they are marketing, they're a demand generation marketing company, right? But if they can show up every single day and paint the picture of this is how you get better at your job because the right way to do things is XYZ, they de facto become the experts in the industry. And those that want them to just do it for them, hire them for it. And those that can use that advice for whatever they need to make their process better, do it, and then refer to him all the time, that then get him more and more clients, right? Like to me, it's such a clean, the kingmaker mentality. Like the idea that instead of you're trying to become king, and I haven't, Don, you're going to have to excuse me. I don't know the gender neutral way of saying this because queen maker is not a good term. But instead of trying to become queen, instead of trying to become king, you try to be the kingmaker, right? Like this idea that everybody else that you can help get to where they're going to be, once you help somebody get there, then everybody that wants to get to that spot is going to know that the easiest path for their success is through your service or your help, right? Like however that works. And to me, that's at the center of why community is so valuable. And I'm starting to see it even more as a strategy for growing a company, right? Like for me, it's very much bled from community as a growth mechanism to before you even get there, you need to implement an incredible corporate culture so that you're able to scale to community and everybody that deals with your company, it's like going to In-N-Out, right? Like you've never had a bad experience talking to somebody at In-N-Out because they're the happiest. I don't know if you even eat meat, right? But like they're the happiest people in the world.
I do the drive-thru.
Yeah. Yeah. But they're like high school presidents that get paid $18 an hour to work at fast food. So they're just always in a great mood, right? So I've been turning my community focus that I've always been very externally driven because I'm very extrinsically motivated. And I'm now seeing it as a internal driver, right? Like if I can drive community inside my company by making people feel valued and that they have all the resources that they need and that they know that by being a part of my team, it's going to, whether they're here for a minute or 10 years, they're going to be able to do better in their career. That then bleeds out into the customer, which then, you know, continues to propagate that kind of like philosophy. What have you ever, do you see intersecting vectors between focus on culture, core values, and mission-driven companies and this like community play?
You know, I really love what you're saying because, well, first of all, yeah, and that, you know, obviously I think it's great, you know, your kind of community focus. But what I really like is the internal culture, your company culture, and what your employees think about you as a leader and your product will have a direct impact on community. And there's some esoteric articles that have looked at this. You know, they're not like they're not the common articles you see. But for those folks who are listening in, I think a real opportunity for research, writing, learning, whatever, is around that, the employee impact on community. It doesn't get talked about enough. When I was at Marketo and also at Intuit, especially Intuit, actually, we did a lot of research on, they call it the Great Places to Work survey, which is a, you know, big company survey about how happy your employees are. You know, you evaluate your job, you evaluate your boss's boss, all that. But there was a direct correlation between employee satisfaction and the success of communities. And I think that, you know, unpack what it takes for an employee to be satisfied. It's the culture. It's, you know, do they feel like they're challenging or being learned? You know, there's been lots of writings about being in the flow and all that. And I think it's definitely in a key place. And, you know, again, this will be a three. And I, you know, Dawn, you might have to help me on the gender neutral part here. But, you know, whether you're dealing with an employee or you're dealing with a community member, I always focus back on like, how can I help you master the product? So as an employee, you should know how to use your product, I believe. How can I help you master your craft? And how can I help you master or accelerate your career? Again, the threes. And, you know, once people work on my team, one of the first questions I ask is like, what do you want to do career-wise? You know, and I think, So there's a cultural aspect, but then how are you going to help that individual be more successful? Like, you know, no one's going to want to work for me if I don't support their career aspirations.
Oof, that was a golden nugget right there. I'm going to have my team clip that and paste that across all my social media channels. So if you could just give this a pause right now, go into the show notes and connect with me on whatever platform you like to follow me on, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, whatever you want to be a part of my life in, connect with me there. I'm going to share that clip and you can share it with your friends so that they get the same lesson. It'll be adding value to their life. And while you're at it, go ahead and subscribe to the show if you haven't already. Hit 5-star review, right? You don't have to leave a review. You just got to hit 5 stars. If you want to leave a review, cool. And maybe send the episode to your friend. That would be awesome. That's it. I'm done. Back to the show. I love that. How do you master the product, right? Like, how do you become a super consumer of our own product? How do you master your craft and how do you master your career, right? Is that what you said?
Exactly. Exactly.
Man, that's everything, right? Like if you can hit those three things, are you familiar with the work of Eddie Yuen and Super Consumers?
Yes. In fact, I read it a long time ago, but I just got it again.
Yeah. So he was on the show not too long ago, right? Cause I'm obsessed with category design and I don't know if you read Category Pirates, but I read it all the time. But I reread the book as I was getting prepared to have him on the show. And one of the things that really struck me was that at the end, because I had just, you know, I've been on this, full disclosure, right? We are, since I realized this overlap between culture and community, I'm now trying to figure out how to target companies that show the signals that they care about their culture, because then this relationship flywheel play will work because it's what we offer as a service, right? So, and I've been kind of on this since about March when I went to do this content activation for a client and a good friend of mine, Brett Ruiz. And I realized that it was this like unifying mission and core values that when I interviewed his team about it, and then I went out and interviewed all of his clients, everybody brought it up in different ways. And I'm like, this is it, right? So I've been really keen on this intersection. This is the first time I talk about it on the show. And as a result, we're out there making the list of target companies that we go and try to get the business with, out of companies that have won culture awards in their markets and growth awards, right? We're trying to find that intersection, and they're very overlapping, right? Like most of these best places to work awards companies are also Inc. 500 or Business Journal fastest growing. It's a heavy, heavy overlap. So I've been telling my partner Isar, who has his own show, to change the name of his show to like the Core Values Leader Show, right? Like we're actually just settled on the idea that we're going to launch it as, I hope he's not mad at me for revealing this, as the Return on Culture Show, right? Because we're using his
back to the culture.
Yeah, because we're using his Yeah, back to the culture. I like that. Back to the culture, return on culture, right? Like ROC, we like this idea of ROI and return on culture. Yeah. And ROC also is return on community and return on core values and all these different things. But, you know, we're diving very much into that, as that is who our ICP is. And as I'm like rereading Super Consumers and I get to the last chapter, it's all about this idea that if you can hire super consumers of your product, then you're going to have an amazing culture. And therefore, it's going to lead into having more and more super consumers, and it's its own flywheel, right? So like, it's amazing how it's all come together. And I would love to know more about this, the study that you were doing it into it back then, and what, you know, where that has gone, and kind of has that evolved for you since?
Well, I love that idea of back to the culture. And I think, you know, it'd be really interesting, you know, since you're talking about the flywheels, figuring out, like, it's when I look at most flywheels, there's no discussion about the different types of people, right? So whether they're customers or partners or employees. So maybe you can, you know, work your magic and think about how that fits in there. You know, it's interesting. Like, so Intuit was very focused on leadership, employee development, and I think they still are today. And I've worked at a lot of great companies, but Intuit was kind of off the charts. You know, Intuit also, recently I talked to somebody there, and they look a lot when they look at prospective employees or employees, they look at the curiosity quotient, right? So we have IQ, we have EQ, and they're looking at the CQ. And so that's another thing that they're measuring for. And I only bring it up as just something to think about, which I think is really important. And certainly when I'm, you know, building a team or looking for community leaders, that's something I think about. So that's one thought that came to mind. The second thing is, I mentioned this the other day at a conference, that, you know, the best employees are the ones that know your product or were customers and all that. So bringing those people in, those super, you know, the super consumers is brilliant. And I think it's important for a number of reasons. One is they know the product. Two is they're probably passionate about it. But I think that, you know, coming in from the outside, they just bring that unique customer perspective that I think is really valuable. And kind of a side note here is, you know, I was once at a company and I had somebody who was in charge of our advocacy and champion program. And, you know, she was an all-star. I mean, just like off the charts, but she wasn't a member of that group that we were targeting. Right? Targeting sounds harsh. She wasn't a member of the advocates we were interested in. Like, whereas Liz, who I worked with at Marketo, our champions and advocates loved her because she was one of them, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think it's, you know, that you can do the cultural thing, but I also think, you know, you kind of alluded to like bringing people into the family, into hiring people who are a member of the audience that you want to target. It's great for feedback. It's great, you know, they relate to the product. I think that's really, really important.
Yeah. Yeah. And the, you know, like the whole, yeah. I'm not going to dwell on that one because we can turn this into a super consumers call, and we've already had one.
Have your logo in my head of back to, I know you, I like the ROC, so don't get me wrong, but back to the culture. I have like, you know, you and this, you know, Duran,
yes,
car, you know,
that's really funny, Scott. Cause the first podcast that I ever thought of doing, and I actually had a logo designed, was me coming out of a DeLorean, and it was, I forgot what the title of it was, but it was something a lot. It was the same design of me coming out of the DeLorean with something like that. So you totally nailed my personality, man. Back to the culture. I like that. We can totally make merch about that. We got some, I don't want to lose steam on the fact that you said curiosity quotient.
Yeah.
I'm curious. Tell me more. How do you, what is that? Tell me, how do you measure it?
So, you know, I don't know, to be honest, I don't know exactly how Intuit measures it, but there's definitely, you know, just like you're measuring EQ and IQ, you can do it through kind of a narrative focus where you're interviewing people and trying to understand, you know, are they the type of people who are naturally curious? You know, if you've read Carol Dweck, for example, she talks about the growth mindset. And so what they're really getting at is who has that growth mindset? You know, who doesn't come, if somebody comes in there and like, okay, I know community, I'm the expert in community, I'll tell you what to do. That's not a growth mindset, you know. So some of it can be through, you know, your discussion with them. You know, kind of a hobby in the past of mine was like personality tests. So, you know, you can get it that way. You can do it through discussion, personality tests, etc. But the point is really the type of person you want to hire is somebody who, you know, there's no boundaries, right? It's limitless in terms of, you know, I mean, you want them to be clear about what they want to learn and want to learn, you know, and to learn. But they don't, you know, they're not going to say, I'm in my box and I'm going to stay in my box and that's all I'm going to do, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm a parent and that's what I want for my kids, but it's also what I, you know, I strive for myself. And it's what I, you know, I think in terms of my friends, that the people I gravitate towards the most are, you know, I used to use the term intellectually curious, but not an intellect. Like they're curious, like they want to, you know, learn more. Yeah. And so that just goes really far, you know, and I can go into a whole tangent about the growth mindset stuff. But I think as you're building a culture, you also want that in the culture as well. You know, yeah. I mean, one of my growth opportunities is when somebody says, I can't do that, then I need to be more patient. But because there are some people who, you know, just natural that they feel that way. But I do gravitate towards those who really think that, they, you know, I'm at this company or I'm working on this product or I'm building this community. And it's a great opportunity to learn and grow as a person.
Yeah, man, that's okay. So curiosity quotient is number one. The idea of curiosity as a personality trait that unites people, I think, is a very powerful concept.
Yeah.
And the other is curiosity quotient as something to measure in the people that you are evaluating for hiring and or, you know, bringing on onto a mission or anything like that is really, really great. All right. Speaking of opportunities for growth, Scott, you've worked at big companies, right? You're now at a smaller company. Sylvia's got a question around how you start a community, which I'm gonna see how you feel about it. And we can play on it a little bit. But Sylvia sure. Steinle asks, this is awesome stuff and totally agree with the importance of focus on your community, but how do you build a community in the first place? People won't see your stuff unless they know to look for you. How do you make them find you if you're not a big and well-established company? What do you think about that?
Yeah. Well, I think the first thing is to find people who talk about your product or the industry you're interested in or the interests you have in something. You know, so for example, if you're, I was going to say baseball, but it's, there's a lot of people from Colombia here, but there's a lot of like communities already existing out there that are probably related to the type of community you might be interested in. Maybe not exactly, but close, right? So those people might be gathering on Twitter and exchange there, so you can reach out to them and introduce your community. They might be on another community, such as, you know, a LinkedIn group, although, you know, not many people are on LinkedIn groups consistently. They might be in another Slack group, but the biggest thing is to find where those like-minded people are gathering and introduce yourself because, yeah, you're selling your company and your brand and all that, but, you know, community managers, if they're good at it, they have a lot of superpowers in terms of like, you know, a lot of people will join communities because of the other people that are there. And if you're the community manager, you're one of the first people who are there. So stop me if I told this story. I told it recently on a podcast many moons ago before the turn of the century. No, it was earlier this year, earlier in the 20th century. I was hired by Sony to market something they called the Dash. And the Dash was something that they marketed as it would sit on your night table and show you the internet. And it was right when the iPhone was coming out. So this was like 2007, 2008 or so. And nothing was selling. The iPhone wasn't out yet, but nothing was selling. And so Sony was really like, you know, we need help. So somebody found me, they reached out to me, and I was really curious of why it wasn't selling. So what I did is I went onto Amazon and I read all the reviews. I mean, literally 1,000 reviews. You know, I drove my family crazy because I read all the reviews around the Sony Dash. And there was a segment of people, women, who were using it for recipes in the kitchen. Mm. Right. So there's a group of like-minded people who found a unique way to use the product and were asynchronously, not really discussion threads, but talking in the reviews. And so Sony and I reached out to them, made them like champions of the product, saying these are great ideas. We'd love to invite you to a beta test of something new related to the product. And we started forming a community around that. So the point being is you might know your product well, but if you're really clear about like the audience that you're trying to reach or your objectives, is start sniffing around the web, start sniffing around, you know, these social media platforms or communities and see where these potential audiences are gathering. Become part of that conversation. Be humble and, you know, be transparent in terms of like, I'm thinking about starting a community. This is something, you know, I'd love to get your feedback on, or I'd like to, you know, so you're inviting them now, the co-pilot concept that I talked about earlier, you're inviting them to give you feedback on this new community. You're inviting them to help build it with you, right? So the first part is where to find them. The second part is make them part of the make them a co-pilot in creating the community. And it's a sprint, you know? And the other thing, which a lot of people probably, you know, community managers know is, you know, historically, communities are not a good place to sell, right? So you're really about here about helping people understand your product, master your product, master their craft, accelerate, master their careers. And if you kind of keep that as your true north, what, you know, what you're aspiring to, I think it's going to help a lot.
Great stuff, man. Great stuff. So kind of synthesize that stuff and the things that I know as well. You mentioned the concept of a watering hole, right? Like Pamela Slim talks about this. We had her on the show, Sylvia, in one of our past episodes. And I highly recommend The Widest Net as a book. And it's a great formula for how to build community with your business. But if you can find the watering hole where the people that, you know, you want to serve gather around, that is a great access to it. And Scott talks about it as LinkedIn groups or a Slack community or, you know, wherever anybody gathers, because the fastest way to grow an audience is to leverage other audiences, right? So the fastest way to grow a community is to enter audiences that have those people. And then, you know, if you can unite, if you can have a mission that is above, you know, that is not about you, that is somebody that's something that someone can enlist in, and you offer them to co-create or co-pilot a community, as Scott talks about it, that's the other key part. And you ended with the quintessential thing. It's about service, right? Like if you are out there trying to build a community to like make yourself amazing or sell your stuff, and it's clear that, you know, it's not obvious that this is about service to the people in it, it's probably not going to do really well. Deb Shell, who is in our community as well, and she's a Mighty Networks expert, so she's got a lot of great stuff to say. She puts, it is a good question on how to bring others into your community. And what I've learned when starting out is to be really visible with your message. If you've identified your ideal client or ideal member, it is about finding where they spend time and go to them and find what their problems are so you can identify what they aren't getting from the current online groups or online communities are already in. We kind of, all three of us said very similar things, yeah. Right?
The one thing you said though, I think is really key here is clarity about like, so if you start inviting people, like I invited these, a lot of them were moms, women to this community for the Sony Dash, is what's the purpose? Like, why are you bringing them together? You know, what are they going to get out of it? What's the mission? You know, and you know, the mission might be as simple as to be better marketers, or it might be, you know, we're all going through, you know, COVID together. And this is a place to, you know, understand like there's a support group here, there's resources, you know, that mission is really clear. And I would say is don't create the mission in a vacuum. Like, you know, I sit here in my little castle in Silicon Valley, but, you know, when I think about new communities and I am about to embark on building a new community, I really want to co-pilot with folks and understand with them, like, what's in it for them? What's the mission that we can both have here, right? So I think it's, you know, great comments there. But also just that mission is really important.
Totally, totally, man. And, you know, Sylvia, I also, as far as just like tactical how to do it, for me, this whole relationship flywheel thing is my trick for it, right? Like this methodology that we teach and that we offer as a service, the idea that if you can show up every single week with somebody super interesting that has a whole bunch of value to offer that can help people out like Scott is, and have a conversation with that person while 8 people in the chat can be interacting and asking questions and becoming, you know, becoming connected to each other. And you do that on a weekly basis. That to me is a really good kickstart to a community, because you're also able to leverage the content from it to distribute it. And while we're building, you know, like I'm very consciously right now building a relationship with Scott, I'm trying to get Scott to build a relationship with everybody that asks a question by introducing it a certain way. I'm speaking to you as the audience, and I'm also trying to enable you and Deb and Jesse and Don to connect in the chat as well, right? So yeah. Making those multiple vectors happen all the time is not unlike being the person that goes to every single networking event and is introducing people. So if you can do this at scale and then produce the content, I find that it's another way to build community. At least it's my trick. Outside of that, Scott, and we talked about this on on our onboarding call, the shortcut to me that I have found is another reason why I launched the bootcamp that teaches this methodology is that if you can take people through a cohort-based online learning experience and they can go through a journey together for like 4 to 6 weeks, and on the back end of that class, you have a show or a weekly thing where you can come and ask questions like we do right after this show, is another way to build community. And if you can, you know, shortcut that idea of getting 20, 25 people into the cohort, then it, you know, it gets you quicker to that, to the first 4 or 5 advocates that might take a show by itself, you know, 3 months to figure out. So those are kind of my two shortcuts outside of the obvious, you know, first principles of it all that we talked about.
No, I like that a lot. I think, you know, whatever you're doing from a marketing perspective, whether it's a webinar, podcast, VCast, or having a live event or having a class, you know, try and keep that cohort together and figure out how to keep the momentum going. Right? Yeah. There's so many events out there that are one and done deals. And, you know, you have people who have a common interest, you know, they're passionate about the same thing, right? They wouldn't be, you know, I think we're all here for a similar reason, right? So how do you keep the momentum going?
Yep.
and involve people? And then, you know, whatever kind of follow-up is after this. And, you know, that's also a big part, you know, of customer-led growth. And, you know, Crowdvocate, you know, we do have this customer marketing platform, but we also are consciously thinking about when we have an event, you know, how do we bring customer marketers together? And that's something, you know, we really focus on a lot. Because we're all trying to, you know, work on this together. And I'm saying customer marketers, but, you know, everybody, I think about, you know, Zappos, right? Everybody in Zappos worked in customer service. Everybody was responsible for interacting with customers. So it's getting everybody, you know, you work with, whether they're direct employees or whether they're your, you know, your partners or advocates, and having that customer-led growth mindset.
Love that. Love that. And Scott, to your point, for us, we've evolved from, we used to have the cohort and then we have office hours and then we have the invite to the show as well that they can keep in contact and in our ecosystem. Now what we've evolved to do, and perfect time to kind of tease it, is this idea that we moved our office hours, which we call relationship driven growth strategy sessions, to right after the show. So now our cohorts, you know, half of the people that are here right now are in our current cohort that are sticking around to ask questions and pick our brain. And we show up after the show, my partner will join, and we give basically like our latest piece of advice that we've realized or stuff that we're experimenting with. And the folks that are in the cohort can mingle with anybody that sticks around for after the show to, again, pick our brain. So Sylvia, you're invited. Anybody else? Scott, you're invited to stay. I obviously don't expect you to stick around for too long, and you can leave whenever you want. But that's kind of how we're doing it in order to ease that transition. And I saw your event, man. Your event looks awesome. I wish that we would have had this show a couple of weeks ago and I could have like planned to go there, but it seems like it's sold out. And tell me more about that event.
Yeah, no, you should definitely go. So it's called Obsession. So if you go to obsession.crowdvocate.com, it's going to be several hundred customer marketing and marketing practitioners and CMOs. You know, there's also going to be a digital experience part of it. But if you be there in person, I think you'll see some unique things. And it's going to be the first conference around customer-led growth. It's June 14th and 16th in San Francisco, my hometown. And yeah, we're really looking forward to it. So far, thank you for the URL there. So far, the feedback has been great. And, you know, it's all about like, if you're going to be customer-led, you got to be obsessed. So we are obsessed. So no, definitely check it out. And again, June 14th through 16th in San Francisco, it's obsession.crowdvocate.com. And we, like I said, we'll have several hundred speakers. You can go to the website and see, like we'll have Amanda, who's the CMO at G2. We're going to have Anthony, who is the CMO of Gainsight and Hopin. So we got a lot of great people who are scheduled to speak. And we're also going to have 3 tracks. So one track is for, you know, I'll call it the 101 or basic track for people who are new to certain parts of customer marketing, like references or testimonials. The second track will be advanced. And then the third track will be for CMOs and senior marketers. So highly recommend it. And again, this is all going to be launching as well as, you know, an academy we're going to have that's going to build on this, where you'll be able to learn about customer marketing and customer-led growth.
Awesome, man. Very cool. I saw that and I was like, oh man, I wish I could have plan to have been there.
Come on, you can be there.
I know. Dude, man, tickets to San Francisco now are like $1,000 to go in like 3 weeks, just for the record. But anyways.
Let's talk. I know somebody at United.
All right, if you got a buddy pass, I'm in. So Deb Shell's got a couple of questions, real good Q&As, and Jesse's got a good Q&A here. Deb wanted you to revisit the CARE framework, right? Could you break down each of the letters, right? Is the C for a community, team, or individual? How do you define advocacy? How do they all kind of like play together? Can you break that down a little further for us?
Yeah, so community being a destination for all the people that interact with your brand or product. And in our case, we're about a community of trying to build a community of customer marketers and customer-led growth. Advocacy are individuals who you're partnering with to really build out the category, to highlight your product, depending on, you know, what type of company you are. I think the key thing is that they're advocates, you know, like I said, they could be advocates on behalf of your product, but they could be talking about the industry. Advocates can also be, you know, we tend to focus on our best customers as the advocates. And I'm really big on the rising stars and future stars and really trying to say, okay, these individuals could be advocates down the road. They can be advocates on your own properties or your non-owned properties. For example, like on LinkedIn or someplace like that, or in another Slack group. Resources. So what kind of resources do you need to be customer first? Whether it's templates, whether it's webinars or podcasts. And then education. Some people call it an academy, but the E is for education. And the way we look at it is, obviously, we have a methodology of how CrowdAdvocate has a methodology about customer marketing and customer-led growth, but we also are going to bring in practitioners to share their expertise. Before I worked at HubSpot, I was at Udacity, and one of the secret sauces there was having industry experts and practitioners speak. So C for community, A for advocacy, R for resources, and E for education. Come join us.
Love it. I'm going to end on Deb. So I'm going to start with Jesse's first Q&A. Jesse asked, so Jesse's got a green building consulting company, right? And he's the head of marketing for a green building consulting company in Miami. And he asks, for a B2B company where many of my clients are competitors with each other, do you find that the clients will not want to be part of the community you are building?
Great question. It really depends. And, you know, you need to talk to your partners or your clients there. When I've had these sorts of communities, everybody has played fair. For those folks, there's always one or two apples in the bin, rotten apples. So that's where moderation is really key. But I talked about the mission of the community up front. So it's really important to define what the mission is, what the rules of the road are. It's also important that you have moderation. But as a community manager, community leader, trying to get people aligned about the purpose of the community is really important. So, but I've had very few problems. And then when I've managed more partner communities, when people are selling similar things, I actually have had areas where people can sell, but I have very stringent guidelines and guardrails about what people can do. And it's usually on the side, right? So it's not the main focus. The main focus is empowering people to be better at their craft, to learn about your product or the industry, and of course, master their career.
There you go. And Jesse, I would challenge you to rethink that, man. Like, you're part of the US Green Building Council, right? Like, and there's a bunch of developers and contractors and engineers and architects that are all competitors in the US Green Building Council. There's also the Latin Builders Association of Miami, full of like typical homie contractors that are all competitors, yet they're all part of a group, right? So I would echo exactly what Scott is saying, that if the mission is strong enough and the value of what's in it for them is strong enough, people will absolutely be part of a community as long as you can establish the ground rules, right? The core, to me, mission and core values is kind of everything, right? Like, if everybody can agree with the ground rules that we play with, then community can be nice in any kind of environment.
Old school community guys used to use the analogy of, look up the broken window theory. So the broken window theory, I'm from New York City originally. So the broken window theory was really highlighted in the 80s and late 80s and 90s in New York City, where there was a lot of crime. And one of the beliefs was, if you break one window, if you don't address the issue right away, then people feel like they have a license to break another window. And that's really true in community. Like, you as the leader need to set the tone. It's the mission. It's about, you know, if there's going to be a bad apple, to address that right away. But I think people, you know, there's also type of people who go to community, usually like, I think their heart is in the right place. So
yeah. Yeah, that's true. That makes a lot of sense. Don wants to know what those tall ships are in the background because they're so beautiful.
So they're really interesting. So they're from the late 1800s. They're all hand needle-pointed silk thread by sailors who worked on ships. I really like boats a lot. My son, I call him the SS Wilder. SS is his initials. My daughter, her initials are Crew, K-R-E-W. But so boats have always been a big part of my life. And when my parents bought these about 20 years ago, and when they passed away, I took all eight of them. And yeah, they're really magical. So just do a Google search on them. And they're really special because, again, they're hand done.
Love that, man. Love that. You know, for whatever reason, for the last like three or four shows, somebody says something really personal that is like, okay, that's exactly what the gift follow-up is going to look like. if you ever want to connect with Scott, send him something boat related. Just saying. All right. So Deb's final question is about, how do you recommend keeping community members engaged without over-promoting or marketing to them? And I kind of want to open the umbrella here, right? Because I know that when you and I spoke about this, you spoke about community, you went straight into client engagement and the importance of client engagement. So I'd love for you to answer Deb's question, but also give us a little bit on how you think about client engagement and the importance of it and how it is the overarching kind of like sentiment here that we're talking about.
Yeah. So you have to excuse me. I don't use the word client.
Sorry, customer engagement.
Customer engagement, but also, you know, it's about people at the end of the day. And so sometimes, you know, you'll have, historically, they said the 9-9-1 rule, where 1% is going to be the active people who are really posting in the community and answering questions. I've seen more 5-10% in the last few years, even higher. So you're going to have those people posting. I think it's the next tier that's really interesting. And sometimes you need to ask a question to help draw them out. Like, they might not be comfortable posting at first, right? Or you try and find an interest they have and draw them out. And so those people then, if you'd be able to draw them out, and then you have the natural people who are answering questions or posting information, is, you know, give them a virtual compliment, tap them on the back, let them know that they're really helping the community here. So those are just two tactics to help encourage people to post. And then there's like, understand the intrinsic and extrinsic rewards. Something that some communities are doing now, which I really like, is, you know, their swag. I think everybody's like, okay, my wife's going to shoot me if I bring another coffee cup home or shirt. But some of the things that companies are looking at now, which we've done in the past, is paying for people to take an online course. It doesn't have to be your own course, right? Because people are, you know, again, sometimes people in community want to learn. And so I think a large percentage do. And so that curiosity factor. So can you kind of, you know, work with that desire and introduce them, or even, you know, maybe even pay for them to take a course. So those are just some tactics.
And what's the fine balance between that and like asking for the business inside of community? Do you have like a steadfast rule, like an 80-20 of just like four parts value, one part ask, or is there a fine line to walk there as far as trying to turn community into customers? Yeah.
So in all the communities I've been in, we've never done direct selling. Although one, I quit my job because we were asked to do that. I think that people know who you are, the moderators or the representatives. So that's you as the leader, right? So they'll know, wow, this guy knows their stuff and they work at such and such a company. The second thing is, you know, people want to be part of something. And so if they see the experts, the answer people, the advocates answering questions, they're going to be really interested in like, how do they get some of that? Like, how do they join the bandwagon? At Marketo, we had the Marketing Nation and people were dying to be part of the Marketing Nation because they just saw all the great work that other people did, right? So no direct selling. I mean, you know, other people in the community can talk about your product, but you kind of have this, the more you sell in a community, the less successful your community is going to be. I mean, people are there for a different reason.
Makes sense. Makes sense to me. Scott, how can we help you in any way, man? What we talked about the event that you got
Obsession.
Coming up. Obsession. Check out Obsession. Go to the Digital Obsession, the digital conference. If you can't make it to San Francisco, you got a new role at CrowdVocate. What's a good client for CrowdVocate? Here's your opportunity to ask for stuff, man. How can we help you?
Yeah. So CrowdVocate, the sweet spot is SaaS companies that are trying to build an advocacy type of program, whether it's for customers or partners or anything beyond that. We basically, everything a customer marketer would do or somebody would do to build out their marketing programs in the retention space. So advocacy, references, customer stories, video, we do all that. You can go to crowdvocate.com. We are having our big Obsession event, which is June 14th to 16th in San Francisco. If you come here, I'll buy you a cup of coffee. And then if you have any questions, like I'm extremely passionate around this space, so you can always reach out to me on LinkedIn, linkedin.com/in/Wilder. Any way you want to reach out to me, I pretty much answer all emails. We're all in this together, right? This is it's a really interesting time. It's an evolutionary and revolutionary moment right now for people that are customer first. So let's all work together.
Love that. All right, Ryan, start letting people up as panelists for the relationship-driven growth strategy sessions. Scott, man, I just really want to say that I really appreciate the two opportunities I've had to talk to you. I think you're a super cool dude. The conversations we have are very, very interesting. And I'm really grateful to have someone like you that has been in this space for so long, for so many consequential things, that is out there, evangelizing this stuff, so accessible to folks that want to talk about this, and that, you're clearly out there to help people. And without the generation of your leadership, this stuff is really, really hard to come to fruition, man. So really, really grateful to have you in my network and that you took time to do this. And I want to be your friend in any way I can. So look for some kind of ship-related gift at some point.
Well, this has been great. I love the questions you've asked. I love the insights that you had. And let's keep the conversation going.
Let's keep it going.
There you go, Scott K. Wilder. Man, that was just an epic conversation. If you like that as much as I did and you want to go deeper into just really kind of like Silicon Valley tech companies community strategy, go to episode 135 with my buddy Jenny Weigel, who also has a 10-year track record of building community for brands like Salesforce and Sephora and stuff like that. And now for the next place I'm going to. Before I tell you the next conference I'm going to, I got to say, if you missed the Growth Now Movement Summit, if you missed PodFest, man, I really wish you would have been there. It was so nourishing to be back on the conference circuit, meeting people. The level of increase in connections to my network that has happened over the last 2 years was insane. I haven't been able to experience that in so long, since pre-COVID, and I would even say since I lived in Miami. I haven't been in a place where I could just stand in the hallway of a conference center and have person after person come up and greet me with a warm hug, have a great conversation, get to introduce them to people, make those connections in person. So if you haven't done that, I not to toot my own horn, but come into a conference with me is a lot of fun. I'm going to connect you to as many people as I can. And right now I don't have anything planned on the schedule except for the Badass Business Summit. And you got plenty of time to book your tickets for that. Check it out at badassbusinesssummit.com, September 22nd to 24th in Fort Worth, Texas. Donnie was the guest on episode 90 of my podcast. And I went to his summit last year, spoke at it last minute, and he was kind enough to ask me to MC it and keynote it. So if you want 2 days of great small and medium-sized business advice on how to grow, and you want to be thoroughly entertained by me for 2 days in Texas, it's a really inexpensive summit for like what it's going to be. Really, really good mix of people. Donnie is a sales expert. His partner, Kevin, is a scale expert. A lot of really valuable stuff there. Hope you join me in Fort Worth, December 22nd, 24th. And now for my big takeaway. And I got to say, my biggest takeaway here was that tangent we went off on about culture, super consumers, and the impact to the business and the ability to create community. For so long, I've been really, really focused on this idea of community as a growth lever for the business externally, but it's more and more obvious that if you focus that, you know, that beam of community internally, you create a great team with a great culture. That is the number one thing that I think is going to drive your business, that's going to grow your business exponentially and make it easy to create a community, an external community as that growth. I'm seeing it everywhere. Scott completely validated it. I've been having these in-depth conversations on Demand Gen Live with Chris Walker, the guy that's really championing this and showing that you can build a business off this community-led play. He's built a $60 million 100-person business in just 3 years using a live internet talk show. So you're just seeing it out there. You're seeing it everywhere. I'm seeing it everywhere. We recognize it ourselves. If you talk to my team, right, you listen to the folks that I shout out at the end of the episode, right? Roanne and Joyce and Marge and Gina and Rita and the rest of our team, they've taught us that if you can establish a mission they care about, provide core values that you incorporate into your business practices every day and lead by example, you get this culture of people that really, really care about each other and therefore are likely to care about your clientele and the people in the community. And it is a flywheel. It really keeps adding to it. You need to listen to Scott, though. You need to follow that curiosity quotient. Folks that care about this, want to learn what you're doing, and are completely community focused, and keep preaching that relationships over transaction motto. And I'm not letting you go without thanking my team. Number one, I want to thank Roanne, who is my personal account manager. She helps coordinate this show and put it all out there. I want to help JP, who does all the technical execution, all the creative, all the graphics. I want to thank Gina, who's our chief heart officer and the absolute heart of our culture. I want to thank Marge, who is her right hand and the one that keeps it all together for everybody else. I want to thank Joyce. I want to thank Joanna as superstar account managers. I want to thank my partner, Isar, of course, who brought this big vision to life so far of how we can keep all these moving parts organized. I want to thank Nicola for doing all the writing and our newest content strategist, Rita. Until next time, don't forget, relationships over transactions always.